Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Rank squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favorite football podcast, back for another week, and with the Ballon d'Or impending, it's time for us to take our annual ranking of who Sam thinks will win the Ballon d'Or. My name is Jack Collins and I will be your host today, and joining me is the rank of Mr. Sam Tai.
Hello, my friend.
Hello, my friend. Congratulations on surviving the weekend. You did what Ollie didn't. You survived the weekend, which was your stag, and Ollie's no longer at the wheel.
Yes, Sam won, Ollie nil. Brilliant, yeah. Isn't it? You guys were there. I'm sure we'll get a little bit of content out of that later, so that people can understand or people can hear what is safe to communicate about what transpired over the course of the weekend. But first and foremost, we'll do the Ballon d'Or first, which, to be fair, it's just as gruesome a topic, because you know I don't like this one.
No, you. This is basically cannon fodder for you to get your mentions ripped apart on Twitter for the next week. But it's exciting,
you know,
because I'm like
really,
looking at it.
I'm really hopeful that now that I no longer work for Bleacher Report and I'm therefore no longer exposed to that very strange, wider, casual, rabid, militant audience.
You've used loads of words there that all are just like complete opposites of each other, which I quite enjoyed. Casual militants.
Casual militants, yeah. I mean, casual football fans, but militant on one particular subject is probably how I'd put it. And nothing distills that and brings that into focus better than the Ballon d'Or. And it is, I am very hopeful that now that we have just a much more sensible, dedicated audience, we could have a sensible adult conversation about it without throwing around a lot of death threats.
No, everyone who's listening, please post this in the comments section on any BR post in the next 3 days, and just make sure that Sam gets heard by that entire audience again.
Absolutely. Oh, and there he is, our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones.
Hey, hello, mate. I'm okay. I'm all right.
You sound the most well out of all of us, which is a good sign.
I keep having to clear my throat here. I think it's because of the cup of tea I just had. It seemed to have got stuck in my throat, which is a bit annoying.
Oh, cup of tea, was it?
Always choke on cup of tea and water.
Right, that's a good start. Let's do some things we love, shall we? Dean, do you want to start us off?
The thing I love is that suddenly Mauricio Pochettino is favourite to be the next Man United manager. And this is a big deal, and this is quite exciting if you're a Man United fan. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer finally gone after the board dragged out his reign as long as they possibly could. They've now taken this decision to look for a new manager and made the bizarre statement that Michael Carrick is in temporary charge while they search for an interim manager before they search for a permanent manager, which is very, very strange. They've kind of gone back on that today, and now there's briefings that, well, if the right man comes along, we might just put a permanent manager. And it's like, okay, what are you talking about here? Just get on with it and find a manager. anyway, the reason I think that they're starting to reassess this is because there are various outlets now, all of whom have clearly been briefed by Pochettino and the Pochettino camp that he is interested in this job and that he would be willing to leave PSG if they are willing to pay the compensation to get him out. Now, it's obviously very interesting. Like, PSG big ambition this season. Want to do the Champions League. They are playing Manchester City this week, so that's going to be interesting for him to answer questions after that. Knowing that he's now favourite to go to the other side of Manchester, he was Fergie's favourite to come in for a good few years now. He had a lunch back with him in 2016, which you still see pictures of every time Man United start to talk about a new manager. There he is, Poch, going for lunch with Ferguson.
Ferguson appointed as successor, it went well, didn't it?
Mate, the thing is, like, you look through, I was like, it's so complicated how Man United get to these decisions. You've got like the Glazers, then you've got Ed Woodward, you've got Richard Arnold, you've got John Murtough, you've got Darren Fletcher, you've got Matt Judge, and you've got Alex Ferguson involved in these things. Like, out of all those, at least Ferguson knows what he's doing and what he's talking about.
And Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, and Cristiano Ronaldo, who will be... I imagine, lads, the next Man United captain. Surely that could continue with Harry Maguire in this state. But anyway, let's see what Pochettino decides to do, because, yeah, he has emerged today as the favourite to take this job. To get him out of PSG, it's going to cost £10 million compensation. Would he leave right now? Well, look, there's various articles stating today that Pochettino... not completely happy. Like, he's faced a lot of criticism over his tactics and his style of play since he's been at PSG. He's having to deal with the constant pressure of playing Messi, Neymar and Mbappe. Hasn't got the power that he would like at the club. There was a lot of talk about Donnarumma when he came into the club, giving him a selection headache because he was already willing to go with Keylor Navas as his number one. Like, there's been all sorts of issues there since he went in. There is not really much chance for him to stay at this club for like 5-6 years. Like, ideally, Pochettino likes to manage an entire club. That's not really going to happen at PSG. And Man United are looking for exactly that. So it might be on, lads. It might be on. If he doesn't do it, then we're talking like Zidane will be in the frame, Brendan Rodgers will be in the frame. But I just think it's really interesting that today, as we're recording this, Mauricio Pochettino is the favourite. And a lot of the people who are writing about him being interested are the journalists that I know for a fact are in with the Pochettino camp and are clearly writing this with some guidance.
It's very interesting, isn't it? It's one of those. But I do think there's a kind of, I suppose it's probably a backstory, but alas, it's a story nonetheless, that Poch leaves now, he will go down as the manager who lost PSG the league title to Lille and then couldn't incorporate Messi, Mbappe and Neymar into the same team. That's not a great look, is it?
No, I don't know if he cares, though, you know? I don't know how much people care about these things. Like, he's not going to be on Twitter searching what people think of him, is he? From the PSG angle, do they just go for Zidane instead of Man United?
Of course,
like,
they would, yeah.
Surely Zidane to PSG is a better fit than Zidane to Man United, and everyone would be happy, right?
Yeah, that's the right way around. 100%. Yeah,
seems the right way around, doesn't it?
It feels like a better fit. Yeah. All right, let's move on. My thing, I love, is that the third favourite for the Man United job is Steve Bruce. No, I'm joking.
That is a good angle,
thing we love.
So, you know, having been on a stag weekend, I've actually watched startlingly little football. But the games I did choose to watch over the course of Saturday, Sunday and Monday, I was treated to some really very special kicks of the ball. Now, first of all, we're talking João Cancelo's ridiculous outside of the boot assist for Raheem Sterling, which is just one of the most gorgeous passes I've seen in a long, long time. I watched it a lot of different times from a lot of different angles, and it just got better and better and better. And then in the same game, Rodri goes ahead and scores the goal. Let's face it, we're all desperate to score. Imagine if you scored the goal that Rodri scored, running onto that ball from 20 yards out, hits it as hard as he humanly can, and it just rifles into that top corner. What a strike to be proud of. And then, of course, Monday night, I'm sort of chilling out, still recovering. You know what? I'll flick on Udinese versus Torino. Why not? Why wouldn't I watch that game? And 5 minutes in, Josip Brekalo scores a genuinely gorgeous strike that I've been trying to rank them 3-2-1 in my mind, and I'm really struggling because they're all worthy of the number one spot. Brekalo picks up the goalkeeper smashes the ball forward and Belotti heads it backwards, having won his duel with the centre-back, and it falls to Brekalo, who's running onto the ball, similarly to Rodri, but he's further out. I'm going to put him at about 30 yards, and rather than hit it as hard as he can, he guides it with his instep, shapes it round the defender, and curls it into the corner, and the goalkeeper who's completely wrong-footed, taken by surprise because he hits it so early and just falls over and barely gets anywhere near it. It is the most beautifully guided strike. And another one I would just be so proud of. So three strikes of the ball, three moments of sheer immense quality that made me squeal, genuinely. Cancelo, Rodri and Brekalo. I didn't watch much football this weekend, but I picked the right moments and the right games.
Yeah, I mean, you've got some good guys. I mean, look, there is just that Cancelo pass. I just think, you know, one, he's been obviously watching John McHale Seri, who does that every week for Fulham. But more than that, it's just one of those things where Cancelo just seems to keep getting better every week. He's like, oh, I wonder what I can do this time. And it just keeps getting more and more intriguing. And here we are, you know, at this point going, what a player, what a player. And you know what, he deserves all the credit. I'm sure he'll be in your Ballon d'Or ranking, Sam, right?
Yeah, so will Brekalo.
Yeah, there we are, the whole thing. Okay, let's move to my thing we love. And I'm going to go to Italy, where the game of the weekend took place on Saturday evening in Florence, where Fiorentina ended Milan's unbeaten start to the season with one of the most chaotic, defensively mad games of football I have ever seen. Starts off in the 15th minute, where stand-in Milan goalkeeper Tatarusanu has a nightmare, frankly, and drops the ball from a corner onto Alfred Duncan's foot to give Fiorentina the lead. And then they make it two on the stroke of halftime with Riccardo Saponara, who was basically, you know, kind of at the end of his career with Fiorentina at the end of last year. Everyone thought he was gone. He was out on loan. And Vincenzo Italiano's come in and he's made him really part of the system and the setup again. And he rewards him with an absolutely gorgeous curler that puts Fiorentina 2-0 up. And just after halftime, Dusan Vlahovic takes the ball on the run. It's three of the best touches you will ever see, right? He takes the ball on the run. First touch, kills it into his stride. Second touch goes around the keeper. And third touch, from an impossible angle, fires it over two sliding defenders into the roof of the net from basically the goal line in terms of whether, you know, where it would go off for a goal kick. It's an absolutely incredible goal. Fiorentina, 3-0 up, 60 minutes and cruising until they decide to literally shoot themselves in the foot twice. 2 minutes later, they just give the ball to Zlatan in the box and he sort of looks at them confused and says, thanks very much, and scores. Then he scores a second, 5 minutes later after some good work from Teo Hernandez. And then it all basically just evaporates and Vlahovic scores a fourth goal after, I have no idea what Milan are deciding to do. They're just sort of passing the ball around on the edge of their own box. And then they just give it to Vlahovic, who sort of gives them the same look that Ibrahimovic had given to the Fiorentina defenders a couple of minutes beforehand and goes, thanks very much, I'll have my second. In extra time, then it becomes 4-3. There's a little bit of a scramble, but Fiorentina get it done. But just an incredible game, you know, from Fiorentina being 3-0 up to suddenly it being all in the balance again, to Milan then throwing it away again, and the chaos in injury time, just a glorious feast of football. And Serie A's had a wonderful weekend in general, really, in terms of great games and great entertainment. But just another nod for Felix Afenajan, who came off the bench to secure Roma's victory and probably gave us the nicest story of the weekend as well, in that Mourinho had promised to buy him some trainers that he wanted if he came off the bench and scored. Mourinho's got a new sort of darling star boy in Felix Afenajan, and he scores two absolutely glorious goals against Genoa to give Roma the victory, to kind of keep them in the running for where they want to be, really. And look, Mourinho's got someone he can hang on to and start to hang his hat on as well from a wide position. We've seen him a couple of times now come off the bench for this Roma side. And now he's got his first two goals in Serie A. And, you know, I think we've got a little bit of a star on our hands. So, yeah, there's lots to like.
Joe, I liked this story a lot until I saw the shoes.
I knew you were going to say this.
They're awful. They're mate, they're those like scuba Balenciagas, the ones that look like, you know, like divers wear on when they're stepping on coral. I loved the story until I found out what the shoes were. Oh, never mind.
That's funny. Balenciaga are getting to the point. There's a new trainer that they've just released, actually, and it's so bad. It's like a proper, like, dad trainer, like a Mizuno running trainer, it looks like. Right? It's awful. And it's like they are pushing the boundaries to be like, what will you lot actually pay £1,000 for? Yeah. Like,
it's
just
a social
to have Balenciaga
experiment.
In them. 100%. Yeah, it's a social experiment because it's, yeah, I agree with you. I know I'm older, but this is absolute nonsense and needs to stop.
But lovely goals. Lovely goals.
And a lovely story, right?
Next week in the pitch.
I don't know. Look, a very few years ago, Felix Ofenajam was playing schools football, not even, you know, professional football, schools football in Ghana. And now he's coming off the bench to score two crucial goals for Roma. He rejected an international call up in the break so that he could work with the team and start to get himself into that setup and, you know, feel like he was really getting into part of this team. And suddenly it looks like we've got a breakout star on our hands. And I think that's a really cool vibe. So I'm in. Good luck, Felix. Yeah,
let's focus on that bit.
Yeah, let's focus on the positives, right? Just because you two are old and don't understand what trainer culture is anymore, doesn't mean that's what's happening here. I think it might be. Right. After the break, we've got a Ballon d'Or ranking to do. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC, where it's time for our main ranking. And Sam, the floor is yours for your favourite part of the year.
Yeah, it's time to rank the Ballon d'Or candidates. The ceremony is next Monday, so we will not have an episode before then. And to be fair, the voting was pretty much tallied up and done by the end of October. So at any point in November, it's pretty safe to discuss, because apparently the voting window is just January to the end of October. Feels like it gets shorter every year, guys. Shorter every year. Soon we'll be handing it out in February after 1 month. But obviously, as you know, this is my least favourite subject. However, more than happy to address it, because everyone loves this. This is one of football's biggest topics. And
it's
so
a big deal.
It is a big deal. And my top five is, you know, as we go through it, it's how I would vote. You know, if I was handing out this award, if I was in charge, and frankly, I should be, this is how I would set the podium. And just a little note, I've done some goal tallies as we go through. The tallies are calendar year, January 2021 through to October 2021, because that's the voting period. It's not last season. It's not this season. It's that period. Okay, into number five, which is where I have put Mohamed Salah of Liverpool. And this one felt like a very difficult placement. I'd say when it comes to the Ballon d'Or stakes this year and Mohamed Salah, it kind of feels a bit paradoxical, because fifth kind of simultaneously feels too high and too low, depending on how you feel. And it depends on how you value this award and how you decide it. So the argument for him being too low here is he's been an absolute machine this season, and well, for most of the year, he stepped it up another level. He scored a ton of goals. Some of the goals he scores, the individual quality on show, have been absolutely ludicrous. And yet the argument for him being too high is, well, the typical currency of how you win a Ballon d'Or is trophies. And he's won nothing, because Liverpool have won nothing. So you sort of weigh it up. And this is where the individualities comes into it. How do you weigh the Ballon d'Or? How do you decide the individuals that deserve it? And ultimately, you go with your gut and you go with what feels right. And I've put him fifth. All right, he hasn't got the big trophies that the others have got. And there's a couple of players that we've left off the list that have won serious trophies, and Salah's in at their expense. But this is an individual award for individual players, first and foremost. And this guy has undoubtedly been one of the best individuals on the pitch this year.
I mean, this is it. It really is about how you judge it, right? I mean, obviously, we're going to have to go through the whole list before we do honourable mentions, do people that I think should have been in there, whatever it is. But I have a funny feeling that because Salah's in here, you've missed out someone I would have put in absolutely
Jack, dead set. I'm confident that you have a shortlist of 85 players you'd just like to briefly mention at the end of this one. Because judging by the last podcast we did, there's a big old list. But yeah, I'm sure I've missed out a couple.
Sometimes you've got to talk about lots of things. Well, look, there's loads of players who have had wonderful years, right? That's the whole point. But, yeah, you know, Salah this season, we've said it numerous times, right, has been the best player on the planet since the start of the 2021-22 season, right? That's where we're at in terms of what we're looking at Mohamed Salah. The problem I have with that is that, yes, he was good last season. There wasn't anything won. And I think if we were talking about, you know, a Ballon d'Or or whatever award it is, even if it was the whole calendar year, you know, even if it got to December and this was being judged in January, you're then talking about, you know, 5-6 months of him being the best player on the planet. And I think at that point you're going, right, fair enough. But I think at the moment with the way that this works, we're talking about 3 months of Mohamed Salah being the best player on the planet. And I'm just not 100% sure, given the lack of trophies, that I'd have him in here. But look, I completely appreciate it. That's not to say it's wrong. It's just tough,
definitely not wrong.
It?
Mo Salah is definitely in the top five here. Like, what date did the voting stop, Sam? Do you know the exact date?
So they'd had it all done by the end of October. So anything from November inwards is basically redundant.
Well, like, he actually, his form was literally until the end of October, wasn't it? He was scoring in every single game, apart from one, like the second game of the season against Burnley, he didn't score. But from then, from 14th of August all the way through to 24th of October, Salah was scoring every single week. So, like, it's that thing about, like, freshness in your mind. And at that moment in time, all the conversations were like, Salah is the best player in the world right now. So I don't think there's any doubt that this guy is going to be in the top five.
I think what helped swing it as well as potentially a little bit of recency bias there, but just the quality of the goal, just to go back to, like, what he did against Watford and what he did against Manchester City, that's definitely a little edge that he has on some of the players that you're looking at, because he actually blew my mind several times in the last 3 months. And if this is an individual award, then that's kind of what it's about.
Yeah, and that's right at the cutoff of voting as well. So it's like, if you're like, oh, I don't know where I'm going. Oh, wow, look at that. I'm going with him. Right?
Yeah, there you go. But he's only fifth, guys. He's only fifth.
Yeah, only fifth. Okay.
Best player in the world for the last 3 months is only fifth.
Go on then. That's number
four. At four, and I struggled to figure out which one goes fifth, which one goes fourth, but I'm sticking to this. I'll take Karim Benzema of Real Madrid in fourth. I tallied up the statistics and, 40 goals and 14 assists in 59 games. So just under a 1-in-1, basically, in terms of a ratio for production. Look, it was a little bit frustrating for him at certain points last season. He constantly felt like the bridesmaid, you know, second in La Liga, Champions League semi-finals, Supercopa semi-finals, and actually Real Madrid exited the Copa pretty early. And then in the summer, you know, gets back into the France squad, and this is something for Benzema that, you know, we haven't really been able to judge him on for a long time because he's not been part of the team. And they go into the Euros as favourites, and that collapse against Switzerland, which has absolutely ruined, you know, the potential narrative arc for him there. And then finally in October, he won something. He won the Nations League. Scored in the semis against Belgium, scored in the final against Spain, and France sort of pulled those games out of the bag and they won it and he got his trophy. Not going to lie, if he hadn't won that, it's possible that he may not have been here, but scoring 40, assisting 14, and scoring like really consistently as well. We're talking about Salah and his production levels this season. Benzema is neck and neck with him. Goals and assists, he is pretty much bang on level with Mohamed Salah. And if you go back through his latter stage games of last season, okay, Real Madrid didn't fare so well in some of these important games, but he was always scoring and he was the one. He is the one that the entire attack runs through. And yeah, there was very few individual players more important to their teams than Benzema last season. And that's continued through this season.
Yeah. What I like as well, I mean, look, the thing that Benzema's got on his side here is he's at Real Madrid, and Real Madrid are good at driving agendas when it comes to Ballon d'Or season. and I've seen a couple of times, like from their main account, tweeting Benzema Ballon d'Or related stuff. And there was, particularly in the Nations League, they tweeted at French football, Equipe de France, about, you know, Benzema, put him in the frame for Ballon d'Or. And that's his own club, like making sure he's in that conversation. Now, a lot of clubs don't get involved in that kind of stuff, but Madrid love to believe they've got the best player in the world. So they will very, very happily push this stuff out there to help their players get recognised. And, you know, obviously Benzema's been doing this for years and he deserves to be recognised anyway, but they'll make sure that he's in that chat.
Do you know what, as well, it's the irony is that if there's one set of players that you wouldn't need France football to be pushed to be recognised, it's the French.
Weirdly, it is.
I'm pretty sure that France football know that Frenchman Karim Benzema had a good year.
Well, they'll be aware. Sure.
Yeah, I think it is one of those weird ones because there's been such a narrative around Benzema, right? And look, I love Mercedes Benzema more than anything, right? I think he's brilliant, and I absolutely agree with his inclusion here. It's just a really weird one because obviously France football are there going, oh, he has been out of the picture for a little while and then suddenly came back into the picture to a World Cup winning team and they weren't as good anymore. And then there's this kind of really strange feeling. And then suddenly they won the Nations League and everything was okay again. But there was that kind of moment in the summer, right, where it was like, oh, hang on, has this ruined everything? That's no slight on Benzema, right? Like, obviously, we know how talented, how wonderful Karim Benzema is. There's no discussion about how much of a wonderful player he is. And look, his relationship with Vinicius this season has been nothing short of remarkable, especially when you consider that like less than 2 years ago, he was like pulling his own teammates aside and saying, don't pass it to Vinicius. I swear he's playing on the other team. There's a real curveball there. We've had a real redemption arc between Vinicius and Benzema. But on the whole, like this is just such an important year. And if Madrid, honestly, I do think if Real Madrid had won the league last year, we'd be putting Benzema right up at the top of this list. But because they didn't, and because they fell short, it feels like this is probably about right.
Yeah, I know. And look, yeah, the France thing got a bit muddled as it did. And it was not his fault. It was potentially Deschamps' fault for putting him in with such short notice and changing everything. But he held up his end of the bargain, didn't he? He got 4-4 at the Euros. He got 2-2 at the Nations League. He's got 4 goals in the World Cup qualifier since he's come back in 5. He's scoring pretty much every time he hits the pitch for France. And he is doing very well. Griezmann's had to change his role a bit to make this work. But with another year under their belt, you're looking at this France squad all of a sudden, this new formation with Benzema up top, and you're like, yeah, they're well back in contention for this World Cup coming up in a year's time, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it whatsoever. Let's move it on, Sam, to 3, shall we?
Number 3, and it's another Frenchman. This is where I have put N'Golo Kanté of Chelsea. So when we're talking Ballon d'Or contenders, I think quite a big part of this is obviously they need to be the best players in the world. It's the best players in the world who have had the best years. And an easy way to define that is which of those players have kind of stepped up when it matters the most and put in big performances in the big moments. Big games, big trophies, big performances, big players. The word big is happening a lot here. It's featuring a lot. Kanté has so much of this in the bank over the course of the year. In Chelsea's run to the Champions League final, which they won, he put in 4 man of the match performances in 7 knockout games. And that includes both games, both semi-finals and the final. He was absolutely stunning. I just couldn't believe what I was watching on a consistent basis, just swarming all over Real Madrid, both legs, disrupting Manchester City brilliantly. That's relentless energy that we know he's got. Brilliant in transitions forward and back, important ball carrying, tons of tackling, lots of disruption. Obviously, it's not a surprise when he steps up and does it the first time. But when he does it like 3 games in a row, semi-final, semi-final, final, and the consistency is there, he found another way to make me appreciate him. And then the good thing about Kanté, of course, is he goes back to club level and he just does it all again, doesn't he? In a blue shirt. And then he goes on to goes off to France and he does it again in another blue shirt. And look, Chelsea's best players last season for me, Kanté and Mount, somewhere between those two. Kanté got the big Champions League nights down. And then I think he's been his usual self this season. So I don't really like the fact that like we decide so much of the Ballon d'Or in the first half of the year. But that's just because it's a silly calendar award and football doesn't run like that. But those are the most important games for a lot of these players. And in those most important games, Kanté was the best player in most of them.
Yeah, no, I think this is it, isn't it? And yeah, it's a really strange one because, again, we're talking about French players here and going, if France win the Euros, does Kanté win this award? And I think the answer is probably yes. It just feels like there would have been no other option but for Kanté to win it if France had gone and won the Euros. And they didn't, obviously, and that's not N'Golo Kanté's fault, let's put it that way. But there is this kind of level of, also, you know, so much of this is done on individuals. And we were talking about Salah's run of goal-scoring form, right? And we talk about Benzema's numbers. And it's so hard to transpose that onto a midfielder, especially one who doesn't, you know, weekend aside, come up with that many goals and assists, right? But Kanté is absolutely faultless for so much of any given year. And so much of the Champions League last year, he was just unplayable and just kept Chelsea going time and time again. And for them to turn so quickly from a side under Lampard who looked like they were going out of a tournament, who looked like they were, you know, dipping out of various things. And then suddenly they go on and win the Champions League. And they've started this season as well, like a train, top of the Premier League. And Kanté has just been, you know, crucial, especially to that Champions League run. You know, but every time you look at Chelsea, you're going, which player would you take out of this entire Chelsea side? The answer is always Kanté. And that's usually a good kind of barometer of just where a player lives in the kind of best players in the world debate.
Yeah, I think he was helped as well by the arrival of Tuchel at Chelsea. I think that certainly took him to another level again. He was probably plateauing a little bit, and then Tuchel, who's always been an admirer of him and tried to sign him before when he was at PSG, you know, felt that he could have a bit more freedom because he can cover so much ground. There's no reason for Kante to be limited in his play in midfield. And one of the messages that he gave him was to go forward and be more confident. And Sam talks about the games he got man of the match in. And it was partly because of that, because he's able to roam more, he's able to drive more. But the players know that no matter what, he'll be back in position and helping them defensively when he's got to be there, because he can outrun every single player on the pitch in whichever game he's playing. So, yeah, I think he was really helped in that sense. You're right, like if France would have won the Euros, he'd obviously probably been top of the list. Benzema not helped in his cause of being the French player that wins this award, because there's already somebody in his own team that's been better than him across the course of the year. So the ranking is right in that sense. And I think there's the fact that I've never met anyone that doesn't like Kante. Like, this would be a very, you know, just reward in a time when we're all looking for good news stories. Like, N'Golo Kante winning the Ballon d'Or would please pretty much everyone. And like, I'm a Fulham fan, don't like Chelsea, but I've got nothing against N'Golo Kante and never would do.
It's such a good point. You know, just because we're all looking for good feel-good stories, give it to N'Golo. Everyone will be happy with it.
It's reason enough, and just say that's the reason.
Yeah,
he's just a really nice bloke who's brilliant at football.
Absolutely. All right, Sam, leaves two spots. I reckon I could probably guess who's going in them, but I'm interested as to what the order is.
Yeah, is Mitro one or is he two?
He's probably both with the goal scoring form he's on at the moment.
Yeah, I can't work it out yet. Go on.
Yeah, so number two is Felix Afenagian. it's Leo Messi. I've gone for Messi in second. Messi of, still feels weird to say, Paris Saint-Germain. Now, if Salah was a bit of potential recency bias, I'd say Messi is the complete opposite, because I really did have to sit there and remind myself of just how influential he was for Barcelona second half of last season, just how incredibly good he was. And, you know, you look at Barcelona now and the state that Ronald Koeman ended up leaving them in compared to what Messi was putting down second half of last season, it really does hammer home. Just to remind you, Messi scored 23 league goals in the second half of the season last season. Second half of the season.
I can't remember it.
It was one of those where...
It feels so weird to hear you say that, because I don't really recall Messi being that player.
There's that moment, right, where it felt... Do you remember how far Barcelona were off the pace at Christmas? Yeah. And then with 2-3 weeks to go, Barcelona were a point off the title. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, Barcelona lost a game which would have left the title in their own hands, which is bizarre to think about considering how far they were off it. And, part of that is Atletico falling off, and they did fall off. But on the whole, you know, the fact that they managed to claw themselves even back into that title fight, and considering how far they've fallen this season, it does remind you of just how influential he was. Absolutely.
Yeah, so the second half of the season, 23 league goals, 8 assists in the league. So 31 goal contributions in basically about 18 games. He also put in a brilliant performance in the Copa del Rey final, scored twice to defeat Athletic Club 4-0.
Yeah. And
that was all sort of January to April. and then he goes off on international duty and he finally wins this international trophy that he's been searching for so long. And okay, look, he didn't win it himself. Argentina had a very good copper. Argentina had some extremely important players throughout the team, and Scaloni did a really good job of moulding an actual team for the first time Argentina has seen one in a long time. And Emi Martinez was huge in goal in a penalty shootout. Rodrigo de Paul was fantastic. The runners wide of Messi, like Nico Gonzalez and Angel Di Maria, they worked incredibly hard to make this team work. But Messi still managed 4 goals, 5 assists in 7 games and won the trophy. And then he had the best holiday ever for about a month. Unfortunately, that may have been where his football year stopped, roughly July. Had he gone back to Barca, been allowed to, and continued his heroics, Messi may have a 1 in front of his name instead of a 2 in my list. Had he walked into PSG and ripped it up,
that might be the case. But clearly he's been injured. He's been absent a lot. Basically, since July, we haven't really seen very much of what many people consider to be the actual world's best player. So I didn't feel that comfortable putting him at number one, to be honest. So I ended up going at number two.
There is a moment here that this summer's Copa America is the first, let's say, senior trophy that the Argentinian national team have won since 1995, right? In that period, they have had, you know, Juan Román Riquelme, Pablo Aimar, Gabriel Batistuta. There are, you could ream this off, you know, you could reel this off for kind of months, how many brilliant players have walked through the Albiceleste ranks.
Please don't speak for months on that, please.
We did that last week. And, you know, I'm not going to go back into Argentina and in internationals again this week, right? But there is a point here where, you know, that is in itself, to be able to restore a top-level trophy to an international powerhouse that has been in the shade for such a long period is just one of the most immense achievements ever. And yes, you're right, it wasn't just him. And for years, it felt like it has been, right? And he's been triple marked and quadruple marked because teams knew that without Messi, Argentina didn't have anything in the tank. But the kind of, I suppose, genesis of this side and the synthesis of the kind of team that Scaloni has put together that has meant that teams can't do that anymore has started to free Messi. And the fact that we saw him, yes, okay, the final wasn't his best performance, but, you know, the semis, the quarters where Messi is winning free kicks, laughing at people scoring the free kick. You know, we saw him in that kind of joyous form. It really did bring it home how important and how wonderful it was, and the celebrations. And, you know, we talked about last week about the, you know, the fact that the Argentina camp feels so together and so, you know, innately focused on one thing again. And it feels like it is Messi that has brought that back together, you know, under Scaloni, sure. But the players and the things you were seeing after the Copa final and the posts from his teammates saying, you know, every single one of them queued up for a photo with Messi to put on their Instagram, you know, with him, trophy them. Thanks very much. So glad to do this for Leo. And it feels like, I don't know, there's something all innately in this that's building up towards, is next year a World Cup year? Is it going to be that? Is it all this? That what we're aiming for here is one thing. And that's what the PSG things are all about. Obviously scored the weekend in Ligue 1. He's finally got that, you know, duck off his back, if you will. I think it will be fine. But I don't think we're going to see this kind of mad, insane Messi at PSG, especially in the league. We might in the Champions League, but especially in the league, I don't think we're going to see it all that much, because I think there is a single-minded focus goal here, which is Argentina at the 2022 World Cup. And I'm intrigued as to how this plays out.
Yeah, we've given him a lot of crap on the old PSG form. And look, he's not really been around for it, but he actually has 4 goals and an assist in 685 minutes. I'm not saying he's been good. He's getting a bit better.
He's definitely getting better.
He's actually been all right. It's just that we judge him to such a high standard that 5 goal contributions in 700 minutes is just rubbish for him.
Yeah. I mean, look, here's the other thing, right? So obviously since 2008, the only other person to have won the Ballon d'Or, apart from Messi and Ronaldo, is Luka Modric in 2018. So Messi is the holder of this trophy right now. It was 2019. Me and Sam actually went to that award ceremony a couple of years ago. There wasn't one last year, obviously, because of COVID. So Messi has it. He's the record holder. And you think about, like, for someone else to win this award, it's pretty extraordinary, obviously. And, like, for Modric to do it was like a big deal, wasn't it? And it was, what did he, I mean, if you think,
I'm not sure about that. Like, as in, still not sure that that was the right idea.
No, that's what I mean. But it was extraordinary in the sense that, like, you're not sure it's right. And I mean, that year, Messi didn't finish in the top three and Ronaldo came second. But it takes a lot for Messi or Ronaldo not to win it. And in a year when, you say, as you say, Messi's won an international competition, he has had unbelievable form at some stage in the year, it means somebody has to have done something extremely special to have beaten him. So has your number one done that, do you think?
Well, I think so. And at number one, I've picked Robert Lewandowski of Bayern Munich, and I've essentially distilled this into 3 different key elements. The first one is, first of all, you put his case forward, like, ridiculous goal scoring year once again. I've
hand counted those stats from January through to end of October, Bayern and Poland, 2021 calendar year. It's 46 games, 56 goals, 8 assists. So it's 1.2 goals per game or 1.4 goal contributions per game over a 50-plus game span. So the consistency levels are absolutely ridiculous. And ultimately, he's been the best guy out there doing the hardest, most important thing in football, which is to score goals and win games. And his importance was clearly underlined when Bayern Munich lost him to injury against PSG in the Champions League. They created a billion chances, failed to put them all away, and went out. And you just know that if Lewandowski had been there, then Bayern Munich not only go through that game, but quite possibly go ahead and just challenge for that Champions League again. The Champions League, of course, that he led them to in the previous season. So that brings me to the second key point here, which was he was robbed in 2020. He was an absolute shoe-in for the Ballon d'Or when Bayern won the Champions League, won the treble, and he put up very similar numbers. And France Football cancelled the award because they couldn't have a nice ceremony due to COVID. So Lewandowski is owed a Ballon d'Or. And then to bring those two things together into key number three, and this is the really important bit, I'm giving this Ballon d'Or out here, and I'm not willing to put my sympathy and sentiment aside. There's a reason for that, though, and it's because I don't think any of the players that we've talked about so far did enough to make me put that sympathy and sentiment aside. I don't think any of their calendar years were good enough for me to go, okay, fair enough, Lewandowski was robbed, but you have been so overwhelmingly amazing that I'm willing to do this. And maybe if, for example, Kante had won the Euros, we'd be talking about something different. Maybe if Messi had dragged Barca all the way to that La Liga title, we'd be talking about a different story. But we're not. I just don't feel like any of them did quite enough. And combined with the fact that Lewandowski once again scored so many goals and won so many trophies, that I could go in any other direction here.
Yeah, no, I think this is fair. It's a really good one. It's a very, very good point. And it does feel like, I think that last point is so crucial, isn't it, right? It's that, yes, there is sympathy. Yes, there is sentiment. Yes, there is all of the above in terms of, you know, you do have to sometimes put that aside, but only if there's good reason. And I think that is it. It's that, yes, people have had good calendar years and Benzema's had a wonderful calendar year. Messi probably, you know, comes closest. You've put him at two. But on the whole, you know, none of it has been, you know, Mo Salah had a good year. He's been exceptional second half of the season. Messi's had a great year. He had an exceptional first half of the season up to July, and then he's dropped off. There's been drop-off periods for everyone else. Meanwhile, Lewandowski has just carried on scoring goal after goal after goal after goal, setting record after record in the Bundesliga. And what you're looking at is then a player who goes, all right, come and take it off me. I dare you. And it does kind of feel in that regard that it's a fair point at top. I do appreciate it.
But I'm sure that you'd have Messi first.
I would, yeah.
Yeah.
But also I weigh internationals higher than you, which actually brings me to my next point, which is that I think that the player here, and there's going to be lots of chat about Jorginho, right? And I don't think it's there. I don't want it. I don't want any of it. But what I do think there's a genuine case for is Nicolò Barella, who I think if you look at what he did last year from centre midfield, he played 60 games across the course of the season. He got 6 goals, 17 assists in those, 43 for club, 17 for country. In that time, he won Serie A. He won the best midfielder in Serie A, team of the season Serie A, and then went to the Euros, won the Euros, scored the crucial goal in Italy's probably most difficult game against Belgium, and scored that winner.
Excuse me?
Don't even start it. I think given all of those things, against the side ranked number one in the world, he was the man who made the difference. I would have had Barella in here at 5. That's my only objection to your list. I think Barella has done enough to justify being in the top 5 of this award. And I saw today he wasn't nominated for the FIFA the best award. And it made me really angry. Really angry. Because I just think that he's done so much. He was, I think, Inter's best player last year. I think there's a case to be made that he was probably their most important player at the Euros. He wasn't their best player, but I think he was their most important player in the way that the fulcrum works. And then you get all that together, and I think Barella deserves to be in this conversation.
Realistically, mate, he's not getting in above Mo Salah, is he?
No,
it's just not going to happen. Like in this kind of competition, because of how it's judged, like that's the problem. Like I love your narrative and I love your reasons and all the rest of it, but
this wasn't who do we think is going to win it? It's who would we have Ballon d'Or, right?
No, I know, but the Ballon d'Or is a personality contest as well, isn't it? And it's like they can't leave. Like Mo Salah's not going to be undervoted in that sense that Barella's going to beat him in there.
No, I agree. I don't think Barella will be in the top five, but I think he would be in mine. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, I think he's my number six. I absolutely love what Nico Barella did last season, and he was very, very, very good for Inter. I'm not sure that he was quite as good for Italy as I was expecting, maybe, is the right way. I don't want to say I don't think he was as good as you did. Maybe I just was thinking there'd be a bit more from him. I don't think that's held me back, to be honest with you. I don't think that's the reason. I just think he's an unlucky number six is probably where you end up with it.
Fair. With Messi, what about the fact that it's clearly not as good a year as most of the years when he's actually won this award? Do you think that goes against him at all?
Maybe you look at the year that Modric won it, and you were talking about it the other way, and Messi had an unbelievable year, didn't even make the podium, and he'd had a better year than he'd had in some years that he'd won it. and I think that you look at that and you put that in context and you think maybe it's not held against him in terms of what he's won. But again, I probably weight international trophies probably higher than some people do. People will say that the Champions League is the most important thing. I would argue that Euros or a Copa is as important as a Champions League for me, but that's, you know, depending on how you look at it, I suppose.
Fair enough.
I love the idea of the international trophy being the most important one, but I just don't think we're there anymore. Not in 2021. It's not the highest standard of football you can find, and the most important, the biggest trophy that you can conceive is the one where the highest possible standard is played, and that is the Champions League.
Or the Europa League, depending on what you're looking at.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It's all good. I think that's probably a good place to call it, unless, Dean, there's any other mad candidates you wanted to chuck into this list.
No, as I say, Mitrovic was the only one I'd really throw into the frame here. His goal scoring run came slightly too late this season, unfortunately. He'll have to take it next year.
Also, as an aside, obviously, we now have a Yashin Award. Someone please tell Keylor Navas. But the best goalkeeper, undoubtedly, this year was Edouard Mendy. Champions League winner, brilliant, and this season has an absolutely ludicrous save rate. Is the reason that Chelsea are currently, you need to take on average 28 shots on goal to actually score one against Chelsea, which is absolutely insane. So well done, Edouard Mendy. I fully expect him to receive the best goalkeeper award.
That actually goes against logic, because when I was a kid growing up, my granddad would be very critical of me, and he'd say, "Have 10 shots and one will go in." That's not true, is it, Grandad?
Not against Edouard Mendy. Mate.
Not if Mendy's in goal. I have to have 28.
Yeah, I mean, probably his record was probably about right for where you were playing, to be honest. 10 shots, one game. Yeah.
No, the under 10 goalies back then, mate, were very, very good.
It was actually Lev Yashin himself.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, right, after the break, we're going to be having a Melon of the Week and, of course, a Gibberish Rankings, which this week is going to be about Sam Stagdy. Welcome back to Rags FC, where it's time for everyone's favourite part of the week. It's time, Dean Jones, it's time.
It's time for Melon of the Week. And this week's Melon of the Week is Pepe Reina.
Yay!
Yeah, another goalkeeper I've had to give it to. Can't ignore it. When they make clangers, they really do make clangers. And Pepe Reina... Well, I was literally laughing watching this, and I had to rewind it and watch it again because I could not believe what I'd seen. Lazio played against Juventus and 1-0 down. Juve go on the counter. They break away. Chiesa goes down the left side. And the camera's kind of like zoomed quite close in to Chiesa charging down with a defender behind him. And then suddenly, out the corner of the screen, Pepe Reina's there, and they zoom out and he's out on the corner of his box, but almost 10 yards out of it to chase Chiesa, and Chiesa's straight past him. He misses him. And you're like, what are you doing out here? Like, Chiesa had a lot of work to do before he was going to score a goal from this angle.
He's like 40 yards from goal on the touchline.
Miles out. And then Reina panics, obviously, does a quick turn, sprints back into his own box, or sprints as fast as he can at this point of his career. And Chiesa continues his run, cuts back into a much more sensible position to shoot from, knowing that especially there's no goalkeeper in at that moment. And as he gets more central, he's about to pull the trigger. And Pepe Reina just comes in with the most ridiculous, clumsy, sliding tackle. It's like it was like Boris Johnson in that rugby video that he did years back. It just clatters into him. Absolutely no doubt it's a penalty. He only gets a yellow card. I mean, surely that's a red. It's just ludicrous goalkeeping, and it denies him shooting. I'm glad Juve scored the penalty because absolutely deserved to. It was just, look, there was a lot of bad defending in Serie A last weekend, but
there wasn't there?
This was the most melonish thing I saw. And if you haven't seen it, go and check out those highlights of Juve against Lazio, because honestly, Pepe Reina, you are a melon.
This is great. I thought you were going to see. The panic as he's sprinting back and he's running. He's trying to close the distance between himself and Chiesa. And you can see in his mind, he's fully gone. And he's like, you are not scoring this goal. This is not happening. If I have to give away a penalty, if I have to get red carded, whatever. And he just goes straight through the back of him in the box. Unreal. Straight through the back of him.
Don't you think that's a red?
Of course it's a red.
I mean,
why has he not got a red card?
There's a couple of players on the line, isn't there?
I don't care. It's just ridiculous. Defender can't do that.
You're supposed to send them off if there's no real attempt for the
ball. I know. I just think that sometimes you have to be like, hang on, I've got to take this into my own hands.
you've got to do some interpretation or something. I really thought you were going to give this to Harry Maggs. I really did. I thought this was a Maguire shoe-in. The way that he gets sent off, especially given that, you know, obviously United had clawed one back against Watford. And then the next thing you see is Donny van der Beek sending Ronaldo through him. Ben Foster makes a wonderful save. Your man, Ben Foster, Dean, makes an unbelievable save. And then suddenly it's all United. And then Harry Maggs just does that. And you're like, what are you doing?
Yeah, he dribbles across his own box almost, doesn't he? And takes a heavy touch and does a lunging tackle and is sent off. I mean, it's pathetic, isn't it? The reason it's not that melonish is because that's just peak Harry Maguire at the moment. Like, that's just what he does like every week. How he's a Man United captain at the moment, I do not know.
He's having a tough time. They're all out of form.
Everyone in the entire United squad is out of form. So there is that. Apart from Van der Beek, he's in the best form.
he's just come on and scored.
And should have got an assist. What a season. What season he's having, indeed. Right.
What a week he's having. He scored a goal and the manager that hates him has gone. That sounds like a broken microwave. What was that?
This is why we don't let Sam do the gibberish at all.
I got a speedboat as well.
You sound like you're gargling mouthwash. It's not great. Right, that is the gibberish.
Well, I'm about to do it because Jack can't physically do it at the moment.
I can't physically do it. There's also the element that I'm supposed to be talking through this gibberish, so it'd be weird to alarm myself. you can't be doing that. You have to be signaled in, right? It's like a plane landing. You have to get the cards out and all sorts. Yeah. But it is time for the gibberish rankings, which is basically some of the things we can tell you about Sam Stagdo, and some of the funniest stories. Some of the funniest stories that came out of it, and I'm going to start number three, with that we met someone who I can only describe as if you ordered Conor McGregor off Wish.com. For those of you who don't know Wish.com, they send you knockoff things of real brands. So we are in the pub, we're watching Liverpool versus Arsenal, we're having a good time. Sam's friend Matt and his best man is currently in the process of every time Mikel Arteta comes on the screen having a genuine fit because he dislikes Mikel Arteta so much for reasons that he could not describe to anybody, which was interesting enough. And then suddenly the next thing is I have turned around and there is a bloke in a kind of herringbone suit, shirt, jacket, waistcoat, trousers with little wire glasses, and who is built like an absolute tank, but quite small, sitting next to me. And I'm like, okay, I don't know who you are, but you are sitting in Sam's mate's seat. So that's interesting. He proceeds to then continually talk at everyone for, you know, I would have I would say about 15 minutes without anyone being really able to understand what he's saying. One, because his accent was incredibly thick. But two, you know, I can usually deal with that. Two, I don't know how many pints this man had consumed, but it must have been a lot because he was not making any feasible sense. During the whole game, we were like, you know, I've turned away. I'm like, I'm going to just watch the game and hope that this man goes away, preferably. I tried to talk to him for about 5 minutes, realized that there was no conversation to be had. There was no logical trains of thought going on. There was nothing to hang on to, really. And when I turned away to watch the screen, I looked back at the corner of my eye and he is shadow boxing to himself. And I'm like, oh, this is going to go terribly. There is a small man who looks a bit like McGregor shadow boxing next to my face while he's absolutely off his tree. So that was amusing.
And he was off to work in half an hour.
He was. That was the only bit of the conversation I missed. He was like, I've got to go back to work. And I was like, I don't think you're in any fit state to be doing anything, mate, apart from maybe going to bed. It's like 6 p.m. You should not be this wrecked, but he was. So that was an enjoyable. Sam, thankfully, was at the other end of the table. So he didn't get to have a conversation with this nice man, but he did get to look on and laugh hysterically while it was happening. So that was enjoyable. Second on the list is, a couple of us had gone out to watch Leicester-Chelsea and some people had gone back to the flat we were staying in. And on the way back, we stopped into a couple of bars by the Cavern Club to watch a couple of games, see some of the music. And they had Sky Sports DVD printer basically working on the screen. So we were seeing the goals roll in as you came in, and there was lots of people enjoying that, and that was great. And we were like, this is good. And anyway, we then go back to the flat. We go back to the flat to witness Sam and two of his mates sitting on the sofa watching teletext. Now, if you don't know what teletext is, it's basically a service from before I was born that used to be on TV in the UK that showed the scores, among other news and things, as they came in, but not particularly as they came in. So it refreshes every sort of 2 to 3 minutes where you see if there's been any update on the score resist. It is literally just text on a screen. That was the extent to which the football was being watched at 3 p.m. on the Saturday. Now, this was all well and good.
I couldn't figure out how to use the TV. I just couldn't do it.
It was a really intriguing way to watch football. Now, this would have been okay, apart from, obviously, I have the Live Score app. Great service. If you don't have it, you really should download it. And I was looking at it, and as the scores came in, I was going, oh, lads, you know, Norwich have scored another one against Southampton. And Sam refused to acknowledge any score until it had come up on the teletext. Now, this was fine, apart from the teletext sort of flickers back and forth. So the goal would come up, and then the next time the page reloaded, the goal would have gone away again for a bit. And then after that, it would come back. And so Sam, you know, where different goals went in, Sam had to do various drinks and so forth. He was doing a shot at one point for a goal that had gone in. He came back and he was like, oh, the goal's been disallowed. I've got to go and have another shot with the goal being disallowed. Had another shot, came back. And then the next time it reloaded, the goal was back reinstated. So back off to the table for more shots, Sam went. But it was just, I don't think I've ever been more confused to walk back into a place and see how people were watching a game of football than was Sam and his two friends watching the teletext.
It wasn't ideal, but I couldn't get any reception. I couldn't figure out how to log onto the Wi-Fi, and I couldn't figure out how to use the television to watch any of the moving pictures that it offers. So this is how
Just use your phone. Just use your phone, surely.
I had nothing. Bizarre. I had nothing. No reception, no Wi-Fi.
None at all.
Nothing would load.
Really?
Nothing. This is the only way.
I think your brain wasn't working, mate. Not the phone and the TV.
At the bottom of the well, this is the only way I could figure out how to get information.
Absolutely. Right. So the only thing that beat this extraordinary episode was that we went to a karaoke bar on Friday night, and Sam's two best men put him up to sing a song for karaoke. And we were talking about all the options that we could put Sam up to sing that would be suitably embarrassing, that would, you know, make him squirm. And we actually decided that we were probably going to, you know, start him off easy. We were like, we'll give him a song that he knows, that everyone knows, because that will be the way that we'll get him started. It won't be too harsh to get him going. So we wrote Sam up to sing Sweet Caroline, which, as you well know, everybody knows. Apart from Sam Tai, who doesn't know how Sweet Caroline goes. Now, Sam took the microphone, you know, kind of regrettably in many ways. Sam didn't look like he was enjoying himself. And Dean at that point turned to me and goes, I bet you Sam can sing.
you didn't.
Can confirm to you that
well, we don't know because he did not sing.
He did not sing. Sam then proceeded to read out the words of Sweet Caroline, like,
wrong
spoken word. No, it was just like a spoken word speech. It was honestly one of the most bizarre things I've ever heard. And, you know, on top of all of this, the DJ is sort of staring blankly at Sam going, what's going on? And he finishes the song. And at the end, he goes, thank you to Sam for doing that. Apparently the only man in the entire world who has never heard Sweet Caroline before. It was unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it. Apart from that,
it's more of a stage fright issue.
Sam sat there for 10 minutes after this with the most vacant, faraway look in his eyes, like he'd been traumatized. Like Sam was suffering from PTSD.
Yeah, he did.
It was a little bit sad at times. I was looking at him going, is he all right? But unfortunately, it wasn't as sad as it had been funny to watch him do Sweet Caroline. So this is number one on the list.
I pulled back through at the end. I needed a little bit of time to myself to recover. I'm not a fan of public singing, if you can't tell by that story. Not a fan at all. However, went into the stag with a can-do attitude and did everything that I was asked to do.
You did do what you were asked.
You did do that. Like you showed no emotion or expression throughout any of the things you were asked to do. You just got on it. You're like a child who's being told to do stuff and just doing it. But well, that's, I mean, you did do it, to be fair.
I really do hope you take this acquiescence and bring it into things we do at Ranks FC, because I've seen you say yes to things that you didn't want to do before, and therefore get on with it. And I'm hopeful that this is something that carries forward into our new into our company.
This is just the deal that me and my two best men have. It's one weekend. You have to dress as we tell you, and you have to do what we tell you. And then once the weekend's over, that's it. You have to do it again for the rest of your life. And that's why I ended up doing these things and more. Like when I did a bleep test in the middle of Liverpool.
I was going to say, is there anything else that you would have added, Dean? But I think the bleep test.
Yeah, it was the bleep test, really, wasn't it? I mean, it was. Yeah,
exhausting.
As the cones went down, they dropped the cones in the middle of the city centre. It was like quite a busy time on a Friday night as well. A mixture, really, of like young, a lot of like families who were like at the end of their night, probably heading back soon, and then. Yeah, like there are other people just heading out to pubs, and then there's Sam
in full kit. He's got shin pads end to end. On.
And there was a whistle involved as well, I think, wasn't there?
There was a whistle. Yeah. I had to keep going. I was booking people. Remember, I had to walk up to that table in the restaurant.
The restaurant, you had to go and book a table of people. That went down all right.
The bleep test, mate. You did all right. Someone joined in with the bleep test, and I tried to push him over. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that. He was showing off in front of his girlfriend.
He was a knobhead because he came in late. I'd already done like 15 laps, and he came in and outran me because I was knackered.
Yeah, I saw it. And I watched him afterwards, and he was just showing off. He was fun.
Yeah, that's it. Well, it was a good weekend, Sam. And you've again, I would say you survived. And that's the main thing. You're still here. You're still here, and you're still getting married, as far as I'm concerned. So that's the good bits. As far as I'm aware, Sam is still here and still getting married. So those are the two main objectives fulfilled of this weekend, I think. And with that, lads, I think it might be time to call this a day. And all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to Staggy Tie.
Fuck you. Sorry, excuse me. Thanks, mate.
Thank you very much, Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back next week where we'll be able to dissect who actually won the Ballon d'Or and if Sam's rankings came to fruition. Thank you so much for listening as ever. We'll see you next week. Take it easy. Peace.